ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Reading from the 8th canto, chapter 16, text number 21. Savidhasyati te kaman harir dinanukampanah amogha bhagavad bhakte netareti matir mama. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace is the Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada ki jai. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is very merciful to the poor, will fulfill all of your desires. For devotional service unto Him is infallible. Any method other than devotional service is useless. That is my opinion. There are three kinds of men who are called Akama, Moksha Kama and Sarvakama. One who desires to get liberation from this material world is called Mokshakama. One who wants to enjoy this material world to its fullest extent is called Sarvakama. And one who has fulfilled all his desires and has no further material desires is called Akama. A bhakta has no desire. Sarvopadhi vinirmuktam tat paratvena nirmalam. He is purified and free from material desires. The Mokshakami wants to achieve liberation by merging into the existence of the Supreme Brahman. And because of this desire to merge into the existence of the Lord, he is not yet pure. And since those who want liberation are impure, what to speak of the Karmis who have so many desires to fulfill? Nonetheless, the Shastra says, Akamaha sarvakamova mokshakama udaradihi Tivrena bhakti yogena yajeta purusham param. Whether one desires anything, everything or nothing, or desires to merge into the existence of the Lord, he is intelligent only if he worships Lord Krishna by rendering transcendental loving service. Kashyap Muni saw that his wife Aditi had some material desires for the welfare of her sons, but still he advised her to render devotional service. In other words, everyone, regardless of whether he is a karmi, jnani, yogi or bhakta, should invariably take shelter of the lotus feet of Vasudev and render transcendental loving service unto him so that all his desires will be duly fulfilled. Krishna is Deen Anukampana. He is very merciful to everyone. Therefore, if one wants to fulfill his material desires, Krishna helps him. Of course, sometimes if a devotee is very sincere, the Lord, as a special favor to him, refuses to fulfill his material desires and directly blesses him with pure unalloyed service. It is said in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishna kahe ama bhaje mage vishay sukha amrita chhadi vishay mage ei bada murkh ami vignya ei murkhe vishay kene diba swa charanamrit diya vishay bulaiba. Krishna says, if one engages in my transcendental loving service, but at the same time wants the opulence of material enjoyment, he is very, very foolish. Indeed, he is just like a person who gives up ambrosia to drink poison. Since I am very intelligent, why should I give this fool material prosperity? Instead, I shall induce him to take the nectar of the shelter of my lotus feet and make him forget illusory material enjoyment. If a devotee maintains some material desire and at the same time very sincerely desires to engage at the lotus feet of Krishna, Krishna may directly give him unalloyed devotional service and take away all his material desires and possessions. This is the Lord's special favor to devotees. Otherwise, if one takes to Krishna consciousness, Krishna's devotional service, but still has material desires to fulfill, he may become free from all material desires, as Dhruva Maharaj did, but this may take some time. However, if a very sincere devotee wants only Krishna's lotus feet, Krishna directly gives him the position of Shuddha Bhakti, unalloyed devotional service. So before I begin, I would like to take blessings from senior devotees like Radha Gopinath Prabhu and Shyamanand Prabhu, Madan Gopal Prabhu and other senior devotees were my inspirations. Hare Krishna. So the episode that is going on is Kashyap's instructions to his wife Aditi, where he's telling Aditi to engage in the service of Lord Shri Krishna. Why? Because the demigods had lost their kingdom to the demons. And Aditi, being the mother of all the gods, was very much afflicted. So she goes to her husband for a solution. And Kashyapa advises her to worship Shri Krishna. So in India, many people have this question, whom to worship, who is the supreme? And they are caught up in various kinds of worships of so many gods, as we can see. But here in this Bhagavatam we can see that the mother and father of all the gods are serving Krishna. So if someone asks whom to worship and someone is worshipping the gods, we can tell them the mother and father of this particular god, Aditi, is being told by Kashyap here in this section of the Bhagavatam to worship Krishna. So why don't you also become favorable to Krishna consciousness? So here is the message which you can learn from this episode, that how all the gods, what to speak of gods, I mean their parents, you know, is worshipping Krishna. So where is the problem to accept Krishna as a supreme personality of Godhead? So Kashyap is afflicted by attachment to her children. We can see that. So what can we learn from this? We can learn the nature of material attachment, that it's so powerful, so strong, so deep-rooted for family, for community, and for children, and for all these things actually, which is actually temporary. So strong that it does not even excuse the gods. That even Aditi is afflicted by attachment to her children. What can we learn from this? We can learn that how even the gods are afflicted by so many problems. Here we can see an episode of the gods being driven away from the heavens. I was just recently discussing in one class the verse. Where Krishna is saying that Yamimam pushpitam vacham pravadanti vipaschidaha vedavadaradha partha nanyat astiti vadena. That Krishna is saying that what is the obstacle or the obstruction to one who is trying to single-mindedly focus on Krishna's service, on Krishna's focused, you know, meditation. Vyavasayatmika buddhi, the verse before that, Vyavasayatmika buddhi, ekehu kurunandana, bahushakhayanantascha, buddhayo vyavasayana. So in this verse, Krishna is speaking about Vyavasayatmika buddhi, that a nishkam karmi, a spiritual aspiring sadhaka, he's endeavoring for Vyavasayatmika buddhi, single-minded focus on transcendentalism. But what are the obstructions to him? In the next verse, he's explaining. Yamimam pushpitam vacham pravadyanta vipaschitaha. That the Vedas have sections which, you know, promote yajnas, like Jyotishthoma yajnas and all these kind of different yajnas. 99% of the Vedas are actually filled with yajnas and sacrifices and karmakanda for the purpose of being elevated to the heavenly planets. It glorifies heavens, actually, Vedas. But here in Bhagavatam, we can see that the heavens are being exposed. The real problems of heavens are being exposed. What are the problems? Here we can see that even the demigods are afflicted with problems. So if, and that's what Krishna is telling, that these are, the desire for going to heavens is a major distraction. And why? Because of this, I mean, that first of all, it's, there are problems even there, and above that is that it's a temporary place. Now, a reader of Bhagavad Gita in the modern times may think, come on, I'm not interested in heavens, no way. I'm not really. But then the desire to go abroad and other things. Like I was explaining the other day, like one person, he came to meet me many years ago, he was sitting with me and asking many questions and things like that. And at the end of it all, he's asking me, so is it true that you, ISKCON is an international society? I said, yes. Do you have centers even in America? I said, yes. So can you make arrangements to send me to America? Is it possible? And it was a long discussion, you know, 1 hour discussion. At the end of it, he comes to the point that he wants to have some arrangements to go to America. So you see, I mean, it's not very different from, because what is there in heaven? It's, I mean, we may think that what's there in heaven? Oh, it's like an abstract place. No, but it's comforts, it's luxuries. Sense gratification, basically. So that is the heavens. And so as long as we attach to sense gratification, we do have a desire to go to heaven. We do have a desire. And therefore, you know, Bhagavatam, the Vedas give a glimpse of what it is, in fact, the scriptures. That the heavenly personalities are so exquisitely beautiful and they are so charming that they can allure the minds of the humans like anything. And we can see the example of Vishwamitra. Is it not? I mean, Vishwamitra was meditating for 60,000 years, very strong sadhana. But the mere tinkling of the ankle bells of Urvashi was sufficient for him to give up sadhana, you know, his meditation, and engage in worldly life. Why? What is the message here? The message is that the desire for going to heavens is so strong. We may say, oh, okay, heavens, what? I'm not interested. But God forbid if amongst us, if there happened to be someone like Urvashi coming down and taking darshan of Radha Gopinath, amongst us, then many of us will have, you know, tough time struggling to focus on Krishna's service. So the desire for comforts and sense gratification is extremely deep-rooted. And the message here is that even though if you go to the heavens, there are still afflicted problems. In fact, yesterday I was just speaking with one devotee, a brahmachari. And he was just sharing, you know, that how some problems are there in his house and some problems between in-laws and mother and things like that. And then I shared, really, I mean, in my home also there was a problem. In fact, that was what propelled me to search for spiritual life. And I still remember when I came to, you know, searching for Krishna consciousness and, you know, a meaning for life and why there are problems in this world. The first thing I discovered is that it's not the problem was exclusively to me. The problem was universal. Irrespective of who you are, there are problems. There are some problems. And what to speak of human beings, I mean, even in the gods, amongst the gods. And here we can see a major family problem. A major family dispute. What is the family dispute? The children of the co-wives fighting. Sons don't want the other sons to take charge. They want to rule, and they've driven away the heavens, and Aditi is suffering. Diti is enjoying like anything, and she's... When we read the Bhagavad Gita, what do we read? Dhritarashtra uvacha, dharma kshetre kurukshetra samaveta yuj, mamaka pandava shevakim akuruvada sanjaya. What do we read? We read about a major, major family dispute. So, you know, misery loves company. So I was very satisfied. And I'm not the only one suffering in this world. Chula chha hai. You know, I was like a little peaceful. Because it feels good, you know, to realize that we are a part of a big arrangement where it has been designed, you know, it has been designed to suffer. People are designed to experience suffering. There is no bliss kept here in this world, even in the heavens. Even though it's a beautiful place, Nandanandan gardens, beautiful people. I was hearing one lecture when Sannyasi was telling that, you know, amongst human beings, if you have to abuse someone, you know, you say, "E kutte, e gadhe," and it's taken like a big offense, like, you know, kutta, gadha, you called me kutta, kutta bola mujhe. I mean, what is kutta and gadha? It's like names of animals, that's all. But it's considered to be, you know, an insult if a human being is called as a gadha and kutta. Similarly, amongst, in heavens, amongst the gods, if they have to abuse each other, what they call each other? You human, manushya. I mean, that's how gods are cursed. They run into disputes. What they do, this is cursed. Go to earth. That's how Bhishma came down. That's how Shakuntala came. That's how Urvashi came down. They're all part of a curse. Came to this planet. So basically, with all that beauty and all that, you know, gorgeous setup and the family and everything, you know, everything is good, but there is a problem. There is no unalloyed happiness kept even in the heavens. You know, I like this story very much, and most of you all might have heard about this, but I would like to just speak it because some of you might not have heard it, and it's inspiring to me. The story of this man who had four wives. And the first wife he loved very much. And he took her everywhere he went. And he showed her off and he gave her the best of clothing and ornaments and everything. He loved her very much, the first wife. The second wife also he loved very much and he showed her off like anything. He was very attached to her and served her very much. He was very attached. And the third wife, he would confide in them. You know, whenever he was in difficulty, he would go to them and confide in them and share his grievances whenever he would run into difficulties. And the fourth wife, he neglected like anything. He never cared about her. Finally, the day came when he had to die. So he was leaving, he was feeling lonely, so he thought, I have four wives. Maybe I can request some of them to come with me. So he asked the first wife, can you please come? So the first wife said, impossible, impossible, and she just left. She was like offended. He said, my God, I loved her so much, I took her everywhere with me, and now I just make one request, come with me. She's just denying it outright. She's very, very hurt, very devastated. So nevertheless, I'll go to my second wife. He goes to his second. Can you please come with me? I'm leaving. When you die, I'm going to remarry. That's for sure. He was taken aback. He said, what is this? I loved you so much. I took you. You know, that's for sure. You die and that's it. I'm going. I'm off with another one. Third one, whom he, again, you know, he confided in and he would share his... He said, can you please come with me? He said, surely I will. I will. But only up to the graveyard. After that, goodbye. And then he was very lament. I mean, he didn't even bother to go to the fourth wife because he didn't love her. But the fourth wife voluntarily came to him and said, I will come with you, my dear husband. I will come. Husband looks at her and said, you will come? Really? I didn't expect because I hardly gave you any attention during my life. So she says, no, I will come wherever you go. So who is this first wife whom he loved and, you know, served and carried everywhere with him? Who is the first wife? First wife is the body. whom a soul cares and takes care, carries everywhere with him, and, you know, is caressing and everything, is putting all the ornaments. Who's the second wife? The second wife is compared to the name, fame, prestige, and money. As soon as he would die, she would remarry, have another master. So that's the nature of name, fame, prestige, position in this world. As soon as a person is gone, everything is gone, lost to another. The position is lost to another person. And what about the third wife, who would say that I will come up to the graveyard, but I will not beyond that? They are the relatives, family members, loved ones, near dear ones, husbands, wives, children, sisters, brothers, dear friends. They're all maximum they can come up to the graveyard and then say goodbye. And who's the fourth wife? Fourth wife is Supreme Lord himself, who's situated in our hearts and is waiting for us to turn up to him. So the message is very clear that there is nothing in this material world worth striving for. That is the message of this Yam Imam Pushpitam Vacham Pravadyante Vipaschida. Because Krishna says, Bhogaishwarya Prasakta Nam Taya Aparhita Chetasam. The only purpose that enjoyment in this world serves is to distract a sadhaka from progressing in Krishna's service. That's the only role the enjoyment in this world plays. That's the only basic role. But still, there's no loss. And in Krishna consciousness, there's so much of scope for one and all. For as Srila Prabhupada is saying, you have no material desires, you have all material desires. Still, you come to Krishna and you worship him, and your desires will be fulfilled and you will be purified at the same time. So nowhere else is this facility being provided. So Krishna says that. Kashyap says that, and in the Gita also it is explained that Yavan Arthu Dapane Sarvata Sampluto Dake Tavan Sarveshu Vedeshu Brahmanasya Vijanata. That you have a huge reservoir of water, and it serves the purpose of a well, and it serves the purpose of different water sources. You don't need all those things. If you just have a large reservoir of water, you can do so many things. You can use it as drinking water, you can use it as water for washing your clothes and for cleaning your house and everything. So similarly, Krishna consciousness is like that. It is an outlet for anyone and everyone. Whatever is the situation you want, you come to Krishna. It's really universal. It's really amazing. Like, for example, something which we can relate with. I mean, there were no laptop, desktop computers 5,000 years ago. Otherwise, Krishna would have used probably an example of a desktop computer. You have a desktop computer. I mean, you don't need other gadgets like MP3 player, is it not? I mean, you have a computer, you can play MP3 files. We have a computer, you can, play video files, so you don't need a DVD player. You have a computer, you don't need a telephone, you can make your calls from your telephone. So you don't need a calculator. Computer's got a calculator. So you have one machine to take care of everything. Similarly, Krishna consciousness is one outlet, one store where you can get everything, what you want. Akama sarva kamova moksha kamau daridi. So it's really amazing. It's like having, if probably there were desktop computers that time, Krishna would have said, one desktop computer is sufficient and you don't need this MP3 players, you don't need this, you don't need that. So a little higher than that is, if you have Krishna consciousness, you don't need desktop computers also. And what's higher than that? So you name it, what the problem is that the problem is that, we have that desires. Conditioned soul has desires. Just like, once I asked one devotee, how did you come to Krishna consciousness? He was a senior devotee, kind of, senior to me at least. So I said, kya karun, Prabhu, mujhe English seekhna tha, aur mujhe English nahi aata tha. Maine dekha ki Hare Krishna wale English mein pravachan dete hain. So I wanted to, learn English. So I attracted ho gaya, aur main bhakti mein aa gaya. I said, really? Wow, amazing. So we see that there are so many things. I spoke to one boy in the base. His record was he had never ever cleared his papers, ever. He was in engineering till the third semester, second year, four semesters he flunked all throughout. Never was all clear. Kuch na kuch backlogs. So I said, really? So one day he came to me and he said, Prabhu, Prabhu, mithai or something. He gave me some prasad and everything. I said, what happened? He said,
First time,
all clear Hua Prabhu. I said, really? How did this happen? And he said, all Krishna's grace, I came here. And previously my parents were saying, don't stay in the base, don't stay with devotees, you'll spoil your career. And now they're saying, aap base mein hi raho, huh? Base mein hi raho and stay there only, take care. And parents are ensuring that now the children are staying in the base. Actually happened. And we've seen that, and actually it's my personal observation, I've seen that even children and all these, you know, we have in our movement, when I compare them with what I was when I was a kid, you know, it's like poles apart. Like, you know, they're so experts, they know to play mridanga, and just in the morning we saw that small boy playing mridanga. And, you know, they know to communicate and socializing skills, and they are pandits, right? From childhood they know so many things. So we can see that if a person wants to even materially prosper, he can come to Krishna consciousness and he can gain enormously. Brilliant, I mean, any person can become an expert, a brilliant. And that is just a sample of what one can get if one comes to Krishna consciousness. So we name it what we want. We want finance, we have financial problem, come to Krishna. Dhruva Maharaj had, Prabhupada says in the purport, problem, financial problem. He wanted money. And who's the richest man in the world? Not Bill Gates. It's Dhruva. Because he got a kingdom greater than his great-grandfather. Dhruva Loka, which is nothing but actually the spiritual world. So, Sudama Vipra, he went to Krishna and Krishna benedicted him with what? When he went back, he couldn't recognize his own place. His wife was there greeting him, please come, Swami. He says, what happened? Where's our hut? He says, no hut now, palace. We went to Dwarka, we saw Bet Dwarka. That's a place where Sudama met Krishna, Bet Dwarka. Bet hua unka wahan par. So that's the beauty, that if one, many times we are afraid to come to Krishna, there is that, you know, shloka, yasya hamanugrahanami harishetat dhanam shri, that he takes away. No, actually the real message is he gives. He actually is giving, and he wants to give. He wants to benedict the souls with the greatest benediction. Like Srila Prabhupada was once asked that, Prabhupada, how can I raise funds for ISKCON? Prabhupada said, the problem is not of funds that Krishna doesn't want to give you. Problem is, what are you going to do with the funds? You're going to use it in your personal sense gratification, or you're going to use it in Krishna's service? The problem is the heart. Just like sometimes the parents may be a little concerned about their children being disobedient and, you know, corrupt. Sometimes children have a habit of stealing from their house. So what will the parents naturally do? They'll just lock up the cupboards. But when the child matures, then the parents will say, you know, take, chabi lo, ghar ka management sambhalo. Manage the affairs, financial affairs of the house. The parents are actually eager to see their children mature, come to the level of, you know, actually coming into the service attitude so that they can hand over the keys. Everything, all benedictions, they want to give, but problem is that not qualified yet. So the only thing lacking is the true desire to serve. But nevertheless, even if one desires something for oneself, one should come to Krishna. He's like the father who will give everything. So therefore, Krishna, in the purport, it is explained, the Lord will fulfill all your desires. Then in the translation is explained, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is very merciful to the poor. There's a very nice story which I came across, of two brothers, Yajnamali and Somali. So these two brothers, they were having something in opposite. One was extremely divine and spiritual, and one was completely corrupt, sinful. Death came to both. Yajnamali was ascending to the spiritual world in the Vaikuntha Viman, and he just happened to just look back and, you know, take a glance upon his brother. And his brother had become a ghost. He was engaged in such sinful activities, he had become a ghost, and Yamaraj was whipping him. So at that time, he felt pity and compassion, and he thought, let me share some of my spiritual credits with him. And he just gave a small portion of his spiritual credits, the portion which he had accumulated after having cleansed a Vishnu temple. So that spiritual credit, he gave it to his brother. No sooner did he do that, he found his brother also seated on another Vaikuntha Viman and going back to the spiritual world. Just the credit of having cleansed the Vishnu temple, he handed it over to his brother and he was on his way back home, back to Godhead. The Puranas explain, this is a story like this. Then there is another story of Sudharma. He's a heavenly personality. He's explaining how he came to that position. In his past life, he was a vulture. Vultures, and Maharaj very nicely describes how vultures, characteristics of vulture. I mean, the most abominable of all bird species. Now, that vulture was caught by a dog, and just before he was killed, the dog happened to very happily, you know, run around at Vishnu temple. And the vulture and the dog both got the credit of circumambulating the Vishnu temple. And because of that, this vulture in his next life attained a heavenly status in his next life. So we see the Puranas are filled with such examples of, you know, people doing very little and getting great rewards in spiritual life. Why? Because of this characteristics of the Supreme Lord. And the Supreme Lord is very merciful to the poor. He's very compassionate. So, it is said that devotional service unto him is infallible. And any method other than devotional service is useless. That is my opinion. That is explained by Kashyap to Aditi. So there's a nice verse in the Srimad Bhagavatam. It is explained. Sa ittham nirjita kakub ekarad vishyan priyan yatho vajosham bunjano na trippyad ajitendriya. This is the description of the status, the situation of Hiranyakashipu. So it is explained, in spite of achieving the power to control all the directions and in spite of enjoying all types of dear sense gratification, Hiranyakashipu was dissatisfied. He had all facility, but he was dissatisfied. Why? Because instead of controlling his senses, it is said, he remained their servant. So, conditioned soul means they want to dominate, they want to control, they want to influence. Some people may dominate in a very harsh way, aggressive way. Some people may dominate in a very mild and polished way. But there's domination nevertheless. Controlling, everyone wants this thing. And here is Hiranyakashipu, I mean, in a position unparalleled in the universe. And he's having everything, power to control and everything, but he was dissatisfied. Why? Because he had not controlled his senses. So this is a very important principle, a dynamic principle, if understood by people in general, if this can be communicated to the people in general, and ourselves, of course, very importantly, is that the problem is not outside, the problem is within our own hearts. Then, you know, it's many times in our, you know, lectures, it happens that we have parents coming with their children to come and hear the lectures. And sometimes we make a point that, you know, how children should be obedient, they should serve their parents, be obedient to the parents, and the parents will look to the children. Suna. And then our next, just after that, we say that how the parents should be, you know, setting a good example for the children, and how they should be, you know, and then the children are looking at the parents. Aapne suna? Everyone is kind of thinking that it is, the message is meant for someone else, but not me. But yes, message is meant for us. And what is the message? The message is that it's our own senses. If our mind is not controlled, if our senses are not controlled, the problem is there. It's not facilities. It's not how much you have, but how much control of your senses you have achieved. Because nothing is enough. You know, and everything is also insufficient. And I came across a very wonderful statistics. It's explained that 50% of the wealth of the world is in the hands of 2% of the people. 50% of the wealth of the world is in the hands of 2% of the people. What does that indicate? It indicates people are not satisfied. And they're so greedy that they don't want to share. They just want to accumulate, 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 and accumulate. The Swiss bank, someone sent me one mail, it is explained, the Swiss bank has 70 lakh crores of Indian money deposited. There are 180 countries who have deposited money in Swiss bank. And out of the 180 countries, the country to top the list is Bharat Mahan. Who says India is a poor country? No. How much is the amount deposited? 70 lakh crores. Money deposited, Indian money in the banks. So that's why some of the yogi is, you know, aspiring to get into politics. He's saying, itna paisa hai bahar. If we just manage to get even a small fraction of it, we'll have to, our taxes will be reduced. Some yogis are getting into politics because of that. So therefore, there's a very nice verses. There are very nice sayings in this regard on greed. One I came across of Mother Teresa. She says, the greatest problem of the world is hunger. Not of the stomach, but of the heart. The hunger is not for food, but love. And only God's love can satisfy that hunger. Therefore, it is explained, Sada santushta manasaha sarva shivamaya dishaha sharkara kantaka dibhyo yatho panat padah shivam. That for a person who has suitable shoes on his feet, there is no danger even when he walks on pebbles and thorns. If you're having shoes, wherever you walk, it's like walking on carpet, soft cushion, is it not? It's like walking on carpet, wherever you go. So a control, a tab on one's mind, a controlled senses is that facility that you get of being able to experience happiness wherever, whenever you go out, anywhere. You experience that happiness and that satisfaction. Just as wearing shoes gives you the facility of walking on soft carpet wherever you go, even though you may be stepping on pebbles and stones, which could be compared to obstacles and reversals and insults and losses and things like that, but still you feel, you know, cushioned. Why? Because your mind and senses are controlled. Maharaj very beautifully explains this point in his book. You know, the episode of Maharaj going along with the books which he had received. Yeah. So he was going from one place to another, carrying this huge, you know, load of books, thinking that these books are so valuable and I, you know, they've been gifted by such great personalities and they are, you know, irreplaceable and I need it. And but it just got stolen. And he was lamenting like anything. Oh, I lost my books, invaluable gifts, I will never get them again. And they were like mementos and all that. And finally, then he started moving on and then he realized that without the books, I'm better off actually. I didn't need them in the first place. In fact, it was not having it is a better luxury. You know, so many times it happens that we don't need so many things, we don't need so much, but we feel that, we imagine and we get artificially attached. And therefore it is said in the Bhagavatam, in this purport, that many times to giving mercy, you know, it's like an aspect of mercy of the Lord that the Lord takes away the material things from a sadhaka. So that in his absence, he actually realizes that you don't need it. I don't need it actually. Out of illusion, he thinks that he's imagining that I need these things. I need it. I cannot live without it. But then when it's gone, after some time he realizes, oh, that's great. It's good that it's gone. And then he thanks the Lord. He thanks the Lord. Thank God you took this out from me. So it just takes that, you know, a little bit of austerity to come to learning that lesson. So therefore, it is explained that the mind is a very crucial element in deciding whether one is actually progressing on the path of Krishna consciousness or not. The mind, it is explained, therefore it is said that one desire conquered is like 1,000 desires fulfilled. One desire conquered is equivalent to 1,000 desires fulfilled. Yeah. It's like that. So, and therefore, you see, now today, why are people dissatisfied? Because people are watching so much of television. If you see, what are televisions doing? They're basically advertisements. There are statistics which show that there are, in one day, a person is exposed to 3,000 advertisements per day. In 1 year, a person is exposed to so many advertisements that people were not exposed to 50 years ago in their entire lifetime. That many ads are being bombarded onto the people. And what are the objectives of advertisements? What are the intent to achieve? Basically, it is meant to make one unhappy about what one has. Is it not? Advertising means what? make you unhappy about what you have and make you buy something. So watching an advertisement means what? Developing material desire. Which is just opposite to what the Shastras are trying to tell, that try to be satisfied. Develop satisfaction. And then you can be peaceful and sit and practice Krishna consciousness. So you see that people, though advertisements can be very interesting and very entertaining, but actually one ends up with being dissatisfied and being unhappy. And that's why you see most of the people, because they're so caught up in televisions and advertisements and everything, you know, they are like unhappy because they're watching so many advertisements and internet and all those things. So they are like major distractions. Therefore, the best thing a person can do is, you know, to give up bad association. As it is explained, I was giving an example of Vishwamitra, who was practicing in meditation, and he happened to come across Urvashi. That was a major distraction. So, as you know, devotees tell that very often, that Urvashi, another name for Urvashi is what? A computer. Is it not? Or an internet, for that matter. It's a major distraction in one sense, or for that matter, television, which is could actually end up with distracting a person from the true path of Krishna consciousness. So therefore, if one realizes that even in the heavens, if one achieves it, it's still a temporary place, then one will actually give up that desire. So recently we had Ramayana, and I like this example of Sita Maharani, Sita, goddess, mother Sita, that she was in Lanka and she was being tempted by Ravan constantly. And when Hanuman comes with the message to Sita, he's observing what is the reciprocation between Sita and Ravan. And Ravan was constantly trying to tempt Sita, that become a wife, give up this mendicant, give up this poverty-stricken guy who's wandering in the forest like a useless person. I am Lankesh, and I am the king of this, the golden Lanka. Become my wife. I'll make you the queen, the principal queen. And she was receiving all those temptations. The ten-headed Ravan is tempting Sita. And Hanuman is watching and observing what is the interaction. But Sita denied it outrightly. No. And in fact, she was trying to preach to Ravan that you please surrender, rather it's not good for you. So she rejected Indrajit, the proposal of Indrajit, Kumbhakarna, Ravan, outright. And the acharyas explained that Indrajit, Kumbhakarna, they represent Ahankar, Mamakar. False ego and false sense of proprietorship. The Ravan, the ten-headed Ravan, represents, is symbolic of the five Karmindriyas and Gyanindriyas. They're tempting the soul. Just like Sita was tempted, the soul within this material world is like in Lanka, away from his Lord. And he's being tempted by the senses to engage in sense gratification, in selfish pursuits. But when he's successful in saying no to these temptations, does he become qualified to receive the message of the Lord? And Ram had given the ring, and Hanuman was waiting to give the message. So Hanuman is actually like the guru who's waiting to give the message to the sincere soul who actually gives up mamakar, gives up ahankar, and gives up the temptations of the 10 senses, and then becomes qualified to receive the mercy. When Hanuman the proposal was given to jump across, so he immediately said, yes, I will jump, I will go to Lanka, I will cross the ocean. So the acharya explained, Hanuman also represents one sense. The lesson we can learn is Dhriti, Drishti, and Daksham. The three principles from Hanuman we can learn. Dhriti, which means courage. Hanuman had the courage to cross over the ocean. And the ocean is compared to the cycle of birth and death, Bhavasagar. So the insurmountable, the formidable task of overcoming birth and death is a challenge which every sadhaka must take with due courage, with very strong, resolute determination. And that is Dhriti. And Drishti, Drishti means far-sightedness, where Mainak mountain appears from the ocean and tells Hanuman, please take rest. No problem, take rest for some time and then you can go ahead. It was a heavenly proposal. a proposal given by the heavenly entities in order to just relax and then go for your service. He was not obstructing him from service, but just saying, just relax a little bit. But Hanuman just touched it to his head and said, thank you very much. Your service I've accepted, but I need to go forward. So that is farsightedness, drishti, which means that to go beyond, okay, I will enjoy now, but the temptations of heavens are good, are attractive, but it's a temporary place. Only a farsighted person, it requires farsightedness to see beyond that, yes, it's okay, I'll go there and enjoy, but then it's a temporary place, and what next? So Hanuman is portraying that, you know, drishti, farsightedness, and daksham, expertise. He was expert. How when Surasa opened her mouth, he went inside and enlarged himself, and Surasa enlarged, and then he also enlarged, and she also enlarged, and it was going on and on and on. Finally, Hanuman just became a, you know, small tiny speck, entered into her mouth, came out, and was expert. He was like, so it is explained that daksham, so a devotee also at the same time must be expert. And that way he can actually cross over the ocean of birth and death. So in the age of Kali Yuga, the best way of taking shelter of the Supreme Lord is to chant Hare Krishna. Naam Sankirtanam Yasya Sarva Papa Pranashanam. It said that the easiest and the most sublime and the most potent method of surrendering to Krishna in this age of Kali Yuga, the process which will give far more benefits and is far more effective in this age of Kali Yuga, is the Naam Sankirtan. More than anything else, 100 times more than anything else, or even personal chanting of the Hare Krishna Mahamantra in the form of Japa, is Naam Sankirtan. So taking shelter of Krishna means take shelter of the Naam Sankirtan. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Hare Krishna. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaur Bhaktarinda ki jai, Gaur Premanande, Hare Hare.